Monster Man, special episode, Half Elves. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and in particular, by Patreon backer Paul Meager. If you'd like to be like Paul and request your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do, not only will you get access to my occasional bonus content and my other podcast, Patron Deities, but you'll also be able to select a monster for a special episode like this one. So Paul, thank you very much for your support, and I hope you enjoy your episode. Paul's asked me to talk about half-elves, and to get things started, he provided a possibly related anecdote. So the story goes that there was a Canadian newspaper that was looking for, they had like a competition where they asked people to complete the sentence, as Canadian as. The idea being that you would wind up with a phrase like, as American as apple pie, or as British as fish and chips, you know, and I think they were assuming, you know, as Canadian as maple syrup, or as Canadian as ice hockey, or something like that. But the winning entry was, as Canadian as possible, under the circumstances. Now, this is a very funny piece of Canadian national humor, I assume. I myself am not Canadian. And it plays, I guess, that the relationship between Canadians and half-elves, we are to assume that Canadians are somewhere between being American and being British, in the same way that a half-elf is somewhere between being human and being elven. And although this is a funny joke, it actually raises one of the problems with creatures like half-elves and half-orcs, which is that when we think of a character who has this sort of diverse heritage, who has, you know, maybe feels caught between or excluded from more than one community, we immediately tend to think of it in the national or racial or cultural terms of our world, which of course makes sense because we don't live in a world where there are multiple, you know, human-like species that can breed together, so we analogize to real-world communities. The problem with that, of course, is that it's maybe not super cool to essentialize those differences like that, right? Like that the difference between different quote-unquote races of humans is not the same as the difference between different species, and you know, it's a little, you know, maybe with half-elves, at least there aren't so many negative stereotypes, but it's a little weird that we're using human stereotypes to describe, you know, non-human monsters. So I'm going to try and look at the half-elven idea more in line with the concept of magical heritage. But we are nonetheless going to have to address the fact that that's the way half-elves have traditionally been presented, as kind of these intercultural characters. And so we're going to have to look at the human experience of coming from more than one community or more than one culture. Hopefully try to do it in a way that doesn't reify hurtful or corny stereotypes. Now, if we look at the half-elf entry in the Monster Manual, which is under elves, we find that it is primarily concerned with the mechanics of playing a half-elf. And of course, this makes sense because you have to remember that the Monster Manual came out in 1977, which was the year before the Player's Handbook. So this information on half-elves would really be the first information that people would have on how to play them. Specifically, it talks about their level caps. Now, the level caps, this produces kind of an unintentionally funny thing, because if you may remember that in first edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, different levels had different names or titles. You know, when you went up a cleric level, it wasn't even that you were just getting better at being a cleric, but you actually received a new rank. You're promoted to being an acolyte or whatever. So the level caps for a half-elf are, if they have an intelligence of 17 or 18, they can become a 7th or 8th level magic user. If they have a strength of 17 or 18, they can become a 7th or 8th level fighter. And they're capped at level 4 in cleric. So the max, normally they're 6-6-4, but they could, under very rare circumstances, be 8-8-4. But the name for this, if you're a level 8 fighter, level 8 magic user, and level 4 cleric, you're called a superhero warlock vicar, which is a fantastic phrase, but maybe not one that you'd apply to any character that you intended to take seriously. All joking aside, this does suggest one interpretation of the half-elf as a character, either as an enemy or as a player character, and that is that the half-elves are jacks of all trades, but masters of none. What's good about them is that they're very versatile. And that makes sense if you think of the idea that they combine the features of humans and elves. The curiosity and drive to innovation of humans, but the high intelligence and attunement to magic of elves. But at the same time, they're never going to excel in any one particular field. You know, 8th level is about where they stop. Mind you, since most characters don't get to, you know, that character's got a combined level of 20, which very few AD&D first characters are going to reach. And half-elves here are portrayed not as outcasts trapped between two communities, but as people who move freely between human and elven communities and share the good qualities of both. So here they're clearly depicted as a bit of an elite. Now, this is actually consistent with how we see this type of magical ancestry being presented both historically and in kind of the earliest literary sources that that clearly inspired the half-elven characters. If you look up half-elves on the internet, you'll find these examples of early medieval Scandinavian royal houses claiming to be descended from elves. But this meaning of elf is so different from the one that we have that I'm not sure that it's really a helpful comparison. It would be more relevant to say that they claim descent from supernatural beings, and lots of European royal houses claim descent from some kind of supernatural creature, whether that's a god or an elf or a monster or just some kind of legendary hero. There are plenty of them, right? Particularly in the early Middle Ages. The literary precedents are, there's a half-elven character in Lord Dunsany's The King of Elfland's Daughter. Now, I was certain that I had a copy of this, but I cannot for the life of me find it. It's not on my bookshelves, and it's not in the special fairy tale bookshelf, so I don't know where it's gone. Maybe we loaned it to somebody, but either way, the character of Orion in The King of Elfland's Daughter is a half-elven character. And then, of course, probably the most famous half-elves in fantasy fiction are in the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean, probably the most prominent half-elven character is Elrond, although Elrond is, in The Lord of the Rings, properly an elf. Elrond is kind of a more human-facing character than most elves, but he and his brother Elros had to choose whether they were going to be elves or mortals. And Elrond chose to be an elf, and Elros chose to be a mortal. And eventually died, clues in the name. And Elros gives some of his magicness, you know, even in his mortal form, there's something special about him that goes on to, you know, the Numenorean people or whatever. I mean, I read the Silmarillion, but it was in like 2002, so. The gist of it is that these are characters that are marked out as special in some way, you know, that the Elrond's human ancestry seems to make him more willing to deal with, or more, maybe just more concerned with the affairs of humans. And even when Elros is a mortal, he still has some hint of that elven magic about him. So, elven ancestry here is mainly meant to kind of indicate some kind of alien magicness, but nonetheless in an accessible character. So, I think that if we're looking at half-elves as player characters, we can apply them in one of four different ways, and that essentially, the first three at least, depend on how you portray elves in your game. So, going from least to most accessible elves, the first half-elven character we have is version A, elves are weird and exotic. Here you have the tale of like, you know, once there was a simple woodcutter who fell in love with an elven maid, and then, you know, one day a baby appeared on his doorstep, but there was something strange and fey about the child. That's your half-elven character in a world where elves are not commonplace, right? Where they all live off in their own isolated communities. And that's fine. That's a character who has a strong motivation to be an adventurer, right? Like, adventurers tend to be sort of misfits and outcasts. So this character who, because of their parentage, doesn't quite fit in with the rest of the world, it's fine. I mean, kind of low-cost exoticism for a player who just wants to be able to see in the dark, maybe, but, you know, it's fine. You can also have the reverse, where the character is an outcast from elven society. Now, I've never read a Dragonlance book, but I'm reliably informed that this is Tanis from Dragonlance, right? That he's half-elven, but he grew up with the other elves, and they were all just kind of like, what's your problem, Too Tall Jones? That's fine, too, right? So, yeah, just another reason for the character to be a rootless wanderer, earning his living by his wits and his sword. Which is what you want in a player character. Well, for certain types of game, anyway. Now, I know that I've been trash-talking half-elf player characters a certain amount during this podcast, and I want everyone to know that it's all in good fun. I don't actually judge anyone on what they choose to play. Like, people should play whatever they feel like, and if you think that, like, having some pointy ears and a modestly tragic backstory is fun, then you should 100% go for it. I am not going to sit here and talk about how people shouldn't play hoagie cliche characters after I play, like, my Dudley Do-Right meathead goody-two-shoes paladin or my gruff has-a-mouse-living-in-his-beard ranger. Those archetypes are widespread and popular for a reason, and that reason is that they are fun. I kid, I poke fun, but actually, you know, half-elves are popular because they're fun to play, because they let you get a little bit of exotic magic on a character while still maintaining a level of kind of groundedness that allows you to relate to other PCs. So the second version comes from a game world in which elves are a distinct nation. And so here we have the idea of the half-elf as diplomat or go-between, someone who has like some level of comfort in both communities and who maybe acts like a translator or a sort of dragoman, or even as an ambassador. Like, the elves sent a half-elf to be their representative because, like, oh, he understands you puny mortals better than we do. And so there, the tension comes not from the idea of the character being a mysterious outsider, but just from being an exotic outsider. He's not from around these parts, and we don't fully trust him. No one's sure maybe where his loyalties lie. The third version comes from your sort of more modern D&D setting, and that's the one where elves are everywhere, right? So there's elves in the city, and there's halflings and dwarves and gnomes and dragonborns and what have you. So yeah, you know, mom's a human and dad's an elf, and we grew up celebrating both Candle Nights and Wolfenoot. I mean, I don't know what kind of holidays they celebrate, but here you have a character who, you know, she's just the product of an upbringing that is different from other people's, but in a world where that's not all that uncommon. So maybe this unique status as a half-elf has given her some kind of slightly different perspective, but maybe it's just, you know, like, there are lots of half-elf kids in the city in the same way that there are half-orcs and half-gnomes, for all I know. So there you could maybe have some kind of rivalry between these distinct communities. You know, again, maybe different groups look down on each other, but I think that there it might be more interesting, you know, if elven-human relations are not that uncommon, then it would be more interesting to look at, like, the pressures that puts on the family or something like that. Like, this seems like it works more in a version of the character that's more zoomed in and focused on the community. And then finally, you got the D option, which is what both my longest-running D&D game and the Eberron setting, which, again, I have not actually read, but my understanding is that this is how half-elves work in Eberron, where half-elves are a distinct community. So it's not that every half-elf is the product of a union between a human and an elf, but rather that there is just a people who are half-elves. That was how it worked in my game, that, you know, half-orcs and half-elves and things were not the product of immediate interbreeding, but of sort of genetic experimentation that spliced together human and other DNA. And then two half-elves would get married and they would have half-elf children. Two half-orcs would get married and they'd have half-orc children. Not to say that they couldn't intermarry with other species, but that wasn't where most of these beings came from. And that meant that there was a distinct half-elven culture with its own customs and its own ceremonies. So these, I mean, essentially, we typically think of half-elves as being rather, like, charming and outgoing, and you can view those either as, like, the survival skills of a loner in version A, right? If you're a weird, exotic guy, you have to learn to be charming and friendly as you wander from place to place, hoping to, you know, slay a few goblins in exchange for your keep. Or as the polished skills of a diplomat in the version where elves are another nation, or as the social responses of someone who's kind of forced to be a people pleaser in the version where elves are ubiquitous. And I guess that's just a cultural norm in the version where half-elvenness constitutes a distinct culture. But definitely there's that ongoing thread of half-elves are charming, outgoing, and likable. And this means that in a way they're challenging PCs because their deal is that they're kind of nice. Insofar as they have some kind of trauma or tragedy, it's caught between two cultures, but without the oomph of a real-world example of that. Because if you're in a real-world version of being caught between two cultures, you know, you might very well be faced with conflicting standards about their religion, or about what career you can follow, or about who you can fall in love with and marry. And that's probably not going to be a big factor in your Dungeons & Dragons game, for better or for worse. So the caught between two cultures bit for half-elves is a very common way to express them, but I sometimes feel like it doesn't bear a lot of narrative weight. And that means that half-elves feel like a bit of a comfortable choice. You know, they have plenty of good options. They give you a little bit of exotic coolness, but without really forcing you to make any sacrifices. But we can turn that right on its head when we look at using half-elves as antagonists. Because what we've said is that half-elves are charming and likable. They have the suave, aloof dignity of elves, but the everyday relatability of humans. That makes them very charming and very easy to get along with. They're both able to flatter the powerful and to pal around with ordinary Joes like you and me. This means that half-elven villains are abominable. The half-elven villain, to be really different from an elven villain should be someone who believes either that, you know, you can go back and listen to the special episode on elves, but they should be someone either who believes that they rule by right, you know, a tyrant, or they should be someone drawn into evil by hubris. The elven villainy is founded on this idea that they are entitled to do stuff that would be forbidden for you and me. But half-elven villainy is founded on being charming. So you might get things like corrupt politicians, dishonest merchants, con artists, demagogues, cult leaders. Those are all people who could absolutely be half-elves because you want someone who has that disarming likability. And that can be both someone who uses likability as a weapon, or it could be an antagonist who genuinely is charming and likable. So you could have the kind of like, you know, the Catwoman character or the dashing rogue. When you have someone who's on the other side who like is stealing the blue jewel from out under your nose, but at the same time like paying you compliments and bringing off of banisters and swinging on chandeliers and what have you, that's very much the kind of thing a half-elven villain would do. And it's exactly the kind of thing that simultaneously makes the character appealing and makes them a punchable little swine. And I think that there's a lot of mileage in that. I think people definitely like not so much villains you love to hate, but villains that you both love and hate. So on the one hand, you can have the character who is, you know, on the other side, but quite friendly and likable. And then alternatively, you can have that character who uses likability and charisma as weapons. So you could have that person that seems friendly and likable, and then you're like, oh, a lot of people think this guy's friendly and likable. That's because he is a con artist. You know, he's bilking all these people of their hard-earned money and selling them, I don't know, fake magical trinkets. And they all believe their magic because he's an elf after all, right? He's an elven prince. Oh, no. Oh, half-elves running 419 Nigerian money scams. Like, oh, yes, my uncle is prince of the elven kingdom, and, you know, he has in his possession 20,000 gold pieces, which he wants to get out of the country, but he can't do so unless you will undertake this magical ritual. Okay, yeah, that's a half-elven villain for sure. I like that guy. Or you meet this lady, and she seems full of religious conviction, and then you're like, actually, these religious convictions seem a little shady, but she's so charming and so evidently sincere in her belief that she's attracted a bunch of followers, and oh no, I'm dealing with some kind of devil-summoning demagogue. And I feel like this is like, you know, the characters that use charm to get their way are best deployed in games that have more of a persistent setting. If you show up in some village, and they're all in thrall to a charismatic cult leader, and you longsword that charismatic cult leader, and then the next day you move on, it's not really that big a deal. You have upset the people because you've harmed someone that they thought was good, but who was actually evil. But it doesn't really matter because you don't have to deal with those people much in the future. But if it's a town that you're going to be coming back to, or if all of your adventures are based in the same general area, if the NPCs that you encounter are people that you have to keep on side in order to operate effectively in the future, then I think there's a lot more fun to it because you can have these challenges of trying to convert people away from the bad guy. And this can be really frustrating. I mean, in real life, people are quick to defend the people who are taking advantage of them because it helps them maintain the sense that they're not being taken advantage of. It's easier to accept that you outsiders who came in here and are telling me that this guy is stealing all my precious blue jewels, are a bad person than to admit that I'm a sucker who's being taken for his precious blue jewels by a slick-talking con man. So a battle of wits, a charm offensive where you have to get people on your side, maybe you have to break into the con man's place and like look for the evidence of the crimes, figure out what the blue jewels are being used for. You know, half-elves make good mystery villains and intrigue villains. And I feel like if you're going to go mad sorceress hubris, you might as well go full elf. But for other purposes, I think the half-elf actually is maybe the superior product because that aspect of friendly relatability makes them more effective villains in some ways. Okay, so I think that gives us some pretty fun ideas for what to do with half-elves in a game, either as player characters or as antagonists. Paul, I hope that you enjoyed the episode. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like Paul, and who wouldn't, All you got to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 or higher level. In addition to all the other rewards that are included at the $1 and $2 levels, you'll get the chance to choose a special episode. Now, as the end of the year approaches, I see that we've got a good number of special episodes still to get through, thanks to the generosity of my Patreon supporters. So that means that this December, I'm going to be doing the Monster Man Holiday Boss Rush. I'm going to try and get through as many of these special episodes as I can before the end of the year so that I can ring in the new year, starting the subscriber spreadsheet again from the top. And that means good news for you, because it's going to be plenty of bonus episodes to get you through those frosty holiday weeks. So that's going to be coming up over the next month or so on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.